This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under the radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Alethea Kasman. The stalemate continues in the Michigan legislature, but we're one step closer to seeing it end after two special House primaries took place this week.
That's right. So let's take a look at the winners. There's Macomb County Commissioner Mai Zhang, who won the 13th House District, which centers around Warren but includes a part of Detroit. And then there's also Westland City Council member Pete Herzberg, who won in the 25th. It's worth noting that Zhang went into the primary with a slew of endorsements, including from Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Herzberg didn't have the endorsement of Whitmer in the 25th, but he was a former representative, and now Westland Mayor Kevin Coleman was backing him.
So while the House is tied right now 54-54, which means nothing is really getting done, these two seats are very strong Democratic seats. These two members, while this was a primary election, not these two members, I'm sorry, these two primary winners, are very, very, very likely to enter the House after special elections take place in April. Until then, though, we're probably going to see a pretty quiet House, maybe a quiet Senate. It's, you know, February now. I think one bill has passed the House. You know, things are moving slow. The Republicans want a shared power agreement. They want the Democrats to come up with some sort of formal partnership between the two caucuses. And Democrats are saying, look, no, we have these 56 seats. Two are just vacant right now. You know, we're not going to set up something that will take away some of the power of majority that we have right now.
Yeah. And so you and I sat down with Senate Minority Leader Arik Nesbitt, and he said that Republicans are basically being shut out of the process.
Well, as soon as the House went to 54-54 tied, they only had a one-seat majority before, 56 Democrat seats last year, 54 Republican seats. And as soon as they lost those two Democrat seats last year, what did they do? They adjourned. They left town. Why did they leave town? Well, apparently they didn't want to work in a bipartisan way, the Governor Whitmer or the Democrats. They adjourned early last year for purely partisan political reasons instead of trying to work on finding common ground.
So finding common ground between two increasingly polarized sides, especially in an election year, it's so much easier said than done. Alethea, what do you make of Nesbitt's assertion that Democrats are not playing nice?
I mean, it's not surprising. Given the dynamics at play here, it's 2024. We're headed into an election year. The parties are increasingly sort of separated even outside of political election politics that are happening right now. You know, in a way, Republicans may not want to give Democrats a big win, you know, heading into November. So, you know, it's not surprising.
And honestly, I mean, it's really no different than what Democrats said for years when Republicans were the ones in power. I mean, back when the Republicans had that, you know, all chambers, all powered majority, they weren't exactly hustling to work with Democrats either. And it seems like we've gotten to a point where if the sides are not forced to work together on something that is like incredibly necessary, that both sides really, really need a win on, I mean, they're just not going to.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of same song, different artist in a way. If you're the minority party, you kind of have the same complaints regardless of which caucus you belong to. So, you know, there might be a few crossover votes. That's kind of what we've seen this year. But by and large, you know, we're not seeing things happen in a super collaborative way. We're not, you know, seeing these coalitions formed right now. Certainly there's some ways, some places where they could come together, things like economic development and education. But I don't know if we're really going to see that. I wouldn't necessarily bet on it. You know, so far this year, the big ticket items, you know, the stuff around labor, energy, taxes, Democrats have done that mostly alone, maybe with one or two Republicans breaking away.
Well, Alethea, you and I spoke at length with Senator Nesbitt, and we're going to get into that conversation right after this break.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Mishmash. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Alethea Kasbin. Today we are joined by Senate Republican leader Eric Nesbitt. Senator, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, great to be with you and good to see you again, Alethea, and nice to meet you.
So Governor Gretchen Whitmer gave her State of the State speech last week, and we spoke with her soon after that. What was your reaction to what she said? Was there anything that you actually liked in her speech?
Cool. She wished me a happy birthday and go Lions. Unfortunately, they didn't win on Sunday, but it was unfortunate that Michigan has so many big issues and problems that are confronting us. Last year, instead of being serious about the issues that were important, such as better accountability in education, increasing that accountability measures, they ripped those accountability measures away last year, the legislative Democrats and the governor. Instead of looking at ways to attracting businesses to the state of Michigan, they repealed Michigan's right to work laws, first time in nearly 60 years that a state repealed the right to work laws. And that tells you how radical the Democrats are up in Lansing right now. And then also, there was a whole set of things, such as the beginning of this year, the income tax increase went into effect, which again is going to push more individuals and businesses out of the state. And then last year, they passed a Green New Deal that is going to increase costs for energy for Michigan businesses and families, and also decrease reliability. Does nothing, that bill did nothing to increase our reliability on the distribution network that's been so poorly maintained in the state over the last, several decades. And so what you saw from the governor was a bunch of short-term talking points, public relations talking points, as she continues to keep her name out in the national sphere to try to run for higher office, whether that's for the presidency or vice presidency. And so I would just say she's trying to keep up with the Newsoms, because that seems to be the top contender that she's competing with for if Biden doesn't have to be the nominee, or maybe it's for another 4 years.
Bringing things back to Democrats in Lansing, the legislature has been pretty quiet this week. There were no votes in the House. The Senate, might meet tomorrow, Thursday. You're in the Senate, you're not in the House, but you work closely with Minority Leader Hall there. What do you make of Democrats saying, there's a lack of cooperation among Republicans or with the Republicans, and that's why, we haven't seen a ton of votes this month?
Well, as soon as the House went to 54-54 tied, they only had a one-seat majority before, 56 Democrat seats last year, 54 Republican seats. And as soon as they lost those two Democrat seats last year, what did they do? They adjourned. They left town. Why did they leave town? Well, apparently they didn't want to work in a bipartisan way, the Governor Whitmer or the Democrats. That's one. Two, why did they adjourn early? Well, because they wanted to do this. They wanted to listen to the White House and President Biden and having the presidential primary next month, instead of reaching a deal with Republicans. That all I was asking for is that they moved it 2-3 days later, that primary, still keep it in the same order. But instead, they adjourned early last year for purely partisan political reasons, instead of trying to work on finding common ground. And you look at how they ended the year. Early, 2 months early, earliest it's been in 55 years. 1968, I think, was the last time that the legislature ended before Thanksgiving. And they left with this partisan energy bill that even goes further than California with the mandates, with the higher costs, with the increase on reliability. And so it's something where they've really set themselves on a partisan path over the last year. And I know Leader Hall continues to try to work on saying, hey, it's 54-54 right now. Let's figure out a deal. Let's try to work on some bipartisan issues. And it seems it's very unfortunate that Speaker Tate and Governor Whitmer continue to just talk about, well, they have the power of the gavel, and why should they negotiate on any bills? And so I find it very troubling that the Democrats continued to have their partisan messaging and continue to not, just want Republicans to roll over on what they want to get done instead of trying to figure out some real bipartisan solutions on infrastructure, on education, on growing our economy. And instead, it's been a year of very left-wing partisan agenda items.
Let's dig into some specifics there. In what areas do you feel that Republicans are willing to work with Democrats? And I mean, what do you think could get done without, you know, either side sort of like completely changing who they are?
Oh, I mean, there's a whole number of areas that I think, you know, career and technical education, trying to reform our high school system so that students and individuals are able to attain not just a degree, but a certification earlier. And that's something where I think you could find some bipartisan consensus on. Same with, I mean, the governor continues to talk about, you know, saying she's the Rhodes governor in infrastructure. And there's a plan out there that's a bipartisan plan that would probably lower the cost about $1 billion a year regarding aggregates and regarding that kind of, you know, siding to make sure we have the sand and gravel that's needed to rebuild our roads. Instead, what we saw last year is increasing the cost of rebuilding our roads with the reimplementation of prevailing wage. We even tried to find a middle ground on that last year that would have probably put that issue to bed for the next 20 years, but it seemed instead of listening to trying to find a bipartisan consensus, they were listening to their big union bosses and trying to jam through a way to increase costs in our roads and bridges by 20%. And there's some very troubling legislation out there that have been pushed and has been recognized by law enforcement as very troubling on safety, on family safety here in the state. And they could promise that they're not going to pass some of these radical left-wing laws such as, you know, cashless bail for violent offenders, things such as letting violent felons out of jail early and actually listen to prosecutors and sheriffs and work on prosecuting, you know, people that do things illegally instead of dropping them. So there's a lot of things, whether it's on, you know, family safety and education on roads and bridges that we can work on. However, it takes two to dance, it takes two to tango. And I continue to try to work in a best way and ready to work with anybody to solve some of these issues in the state. Instead, over the last year, you saw the governor and these legislative Democrats worked in every way possible to make it more expensive to do business here in the state of Michigan, to raise a family here in the state of Michigan. And now, you know, that you have a governor that's trying to promise all things to all people without a way to pay for it. And the bill's going to have to come due eventually.
Switching gears a little bit here, 2024 is, of course, a big election year, not for the Michigan Senate, but, you know, we have the presidential race. We have the Michigan House up again. Previously, you endorsed Ron DeSantis for president. He has, you know, dropped out of the race. Are you now throwing your support behind former President Trump?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you look at it, it seems to be a President Trump versus President Biden race right now. And you look at the troubles that you see in the Middle East, the war, you know, under President Trump, they were making real negotiations and making progress and peace in the Middle East. You saw even Ambassador Ricolta work on the Abraham Accords. Ukraine, the war in Ukraine with Russia. You see the border and the southern border just seems to be no enforcement mechanisms at all. As President Biden spent the first few months completely wiping out any of the executive orders and laws that Trump was enforcing to keep the border under control, and only in let me get started on the debts and deficits that continue to be rack up by the Biden administration. $34 trillion of debt right now, $2 trillion of deficit spending. No seriousness in actually addressing some of these long-term issues. And so it is, I think this year's election is a clear case between, do you believe in the individual, believe in the American people, or do you believe in centralized government, and I think an ineptness from the Biden administration. So it can't be a clear differentiation between that. And that's why I think you see President Trump doing so well, not just in the polling, but what you see on the ground and the excitement around here in Michigan.
Do you have any concerns about his continued claims that the last election was stolen from him and that there's there's no faith in our current electoral system, or, you know, even his current lawsuits and, you know, various in-depth legal troubles?
I think what people see are the policy issues that separate these two candidates. And they saw 4 years of Trump versus the last 3 years, coming on 4 years of President Biden, that, again, you can't draw a sharper contrast between individuals that have a strong foreign policy, that believe in our national defense, that are tough on illegal immigration, while allowing legal immigrants to come here. Somebody who's serious on growing the economy and investing in American jobs. And so it's something where what you hear, continue to see, is that the press, I mean, you see any of the polling, and the press continues to have very few Republicans or conservative voices within the mainstream press, and whereas the vast majority are pretty liberal on the spectrum. And so I think this is part of the challenge, is that we've known for decades that Republicans just don't get a fair shake in the national press.
So do you think that the last election was stolen from President Trump?
I think there was areas that, you know, you saw within, you know, the Senate that we investigated, and we looked at a lot of them, and there were some changes where we filed lawsuits in 2020 with Jocelyn Benson. We won a few of those lawsuits that we filed, and we didn't win a few of those. And so once again, as you look at going forward, we need to make sure that we have safe, secure elections, that one person equals one vote. And at the end of the day is, how do we draw more people into actually being able to be Republicans, believe in what we believe in terms of free market economics, choice in our school systems, and a strong national defense. But once again, I'm concentrating on the next election, and the media seems to continue to be concentrated on past elections.
Well, just because, you know, the past election could influence the upcoming election. If the former president is saying that the last election was rigged, and then he loses in the upcoming election, isn't there a concern that he's going to keep saying that because he didn't win, or when he loses, that it's because it was rigged? And that can really, like, have a huge impact on our democracy. So, I mean, that's why people are concerned about him continuing to say that the last election was stolen from him.
See, Shana, you talk about the institution, the importance of institutions here in America. And a lot of times you don't hear at all from the media about how the Democrats continue to try to knock down our U.S. Supreme Court and say that we're a lawless land. We shouldn't listen to them. We need to pack the Supreme Court. We need to go on these institutions such as the U.S. Senate and abolish this filibuster. I mean, I don't hear these kind of questions from the media to Democrats trying to say, where are you on these institutions? I continue to trust in our American institutions. I continue to trust in American exceptionalism. And I just don't think, as we look forward, I think it's important on the political side, if you want to get into politics, that we have better early voting. We can beat them at doing absentee voting, that we can go ahead and make sure that we get our low propensity voters out to be able, while also communicating with independent voters. And so that's, at the end of the day, we got to make sure that though the election laws have changed, we got to be able to compete on that playing field. And that's what we're working on.
And bringing this back to the election report that Senate Republicans handled way back when, it feels like a million years ago now, that report did find that, you know, there wasn't any widespread fraud that led to, you know, Donald Trump falsely losing the election in 2020, correct?
But there was widespread systematic changes of the laws that happened in 2020 by Jocelyn Benson. Gerrymander Jocelyn is kind of the nickname I show as we see that.
Well, she didn't change them. She doesn't have the power to change the laws. Well, those are from various proposals.
Why did she send out mass absentee ballot applications in earlier in 2020?
Because she was...
She didn't have legislative authority to do that. We filed lawsuits on changes that she made to election laws that she thought she could under the rules, but she couldn't under statute. And so there was areas that she was changing election laws that weren't up to snuff. We won in court on some of them. We lost in court on some of them. But at the end of the day, that breeds an increase in distrust in the system because of things that Jocelyn Benson did and changed election laws without the legislative approval.
Right. So I want to bring this back to sort of what you just talked about a little bit, mentioning early voting and kind of playing on the same field as Democrats have been playing on for the last several years. You know, I'm wondering, do you think former President Trump needs to kind of change some rhetoric around early voting? Do Republicans need to change some rhetoric around absentees to get your voters there earlier and potentially lift up, you know, your vote numbers around the state?
Well, I think you look at it this fall, and you already look at, I mean, polling was just came out from Bloomberg Morning Consult showing Trump up, what was it, 6-7 points or so on top of polls a few weeks ago. And so you see the engagement that's there, and especially on the Republican side and the excitement, I think 2022, that what you saw was you saw heavy engagement from both sides, but a lot heavier from the Democrat side. They had near presidential year turnout in 22, mostly from the abortion issue in Prop 3, about 600,000 more voters turned out than either side had expected. And at the end of the day, Michigan's a competitive state. I mean, Whitmer may have won by 11 points at the top of the ticket, but you add up all the state legislative seats statewide, and Democrats only won by one percentage point if you add them all up. And that's 400 votes out of 40,000 cast in one state house district downriver that would have tied the state house. And it was 400 votes out of 130,000 cast in a Macomb County seat that would have tied the state Senate. And so as you look at Michigan, Michigan's a competitive state. And what you've seen from Governor Whitmer and the legislative Democrats over the past year is they went on a far left-wing progressive agenda item that I think is not going to serve them well this fall and will result in Michigan Republicans picking up the state house. I mean, there's three House Democrats that are in districts that Trump won in 2020. And so I think you start with those, and then there's another four or five that are within low single digits. And you saw what happened, you know, I mean, the headlines, again, you know, show that Glenn Youngkin, you know, didn't win the majorities in the House and Senate in Virginia. However, you look under the hood, and Republicans won every Senate and House seat in Virginia. Again, a plus 10 Biden state in Virginia. Michigan's a plus 3 Biden state. If you look at Virginia itself, and they won every state House seat and Senate seat that Biden won by 9 points or less. And so if you copy and paste that same strategy going in this year, and they were very effective in creating the organization for early voting, absentee voting, getting low propensity Republican voters out, and messaging to independent voters, that would mean 65 House Republicans next year. I'm not saying it's going to happen, and you know, comparing an off election year to a presidential year, but if I was the House Democrats, I'd be very concerned with the way voter turnout's going to be this fall. And you already see how you know, Biden continues you know, to flail in the polls and his disapproval rating.
I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about what's going on in Michigan at the leadership level. There has been a very contentious fight going on that has involved in current GOP chair Christina Caramo essentially being maybe kind of sort of kicked out of her seat. What is your response to what's happening right there?
I mean, this is going to be something you know, that's going to be left up to the state committee, the precinct delegates, and the Republican National Committee. And so that's something where I'm going to wait to see where that all comes out. But at the end of the day, any party organization, if they're concentrating on the next election, raising money, working to turn out the vote, working to message on how poorly the Biden administration is actually doing and messaging that to independents, I'm going to join in with them and work with them. But I haven't seen much of that over the last year. And so my hope is that we can concentrate on the 24 election. This is such an important election to see where not just our country goes, but our state goes. Where's our place in the international community? And so I think it's extremely important that we make sure we have the organization in place. I know Leader Hall right now has, you know, as you look over the past year, it's not easy to outraise The majority party, and Leader Hall's done that over the last year. I mean, he's consistently done that, which isn't easy to do in the place of the minority. And I think he's getting that help from Governor Snyder, getting that help from a list of folks that are working to make sure that we have the organization in place. And I'm the vice chair of the Republican Legislative Campaign Committee, the RLCC. It's a national organization that concentrates on legislative races around the state. And we're going to be working to make sure we're raising the resources nationally to put in to some of this early voting and absentee voting, you know, in the top 10, 11, 12 House districts that matter. And you're going to see us come up with a majority in November of this year.
Sort of in that same vein there, you know, like you said, there's a lot of different organizations that Republicans can kind of get support from as you're, you know, working to gain back the state house this year. But do you find it harmful to have a Michigan Republican Party that is consumed, you know, by this infighting right now? Would it be, you know, is that harmful for you as you're working?
A lot of
on
energy
this?
Out there. I've never seen so much energy from the base that's out there. And that's something where, you know, there's two ways. You got to turn out your base and energize your voters. And you're going to see that with, I think, President Trump at the top of the ticket with the base. And something that's interesting on whether it's the Pete Oakster side or the Caramo side is that both are supporting the future nominee, President Trump. And you see that excitement. And then the next level is independence, of persuading those independents. And I think you see that with, it seems like President Trump might be having another Hillary Clinton this year with the way Biden's poll numbers are. I mean, just in the tank with independent voters. And I've never, you know, I haven't seen polling like that for an individual since probably Hillary Clinton and some of these competitive legislative seats since 2016.
Senator Nesbitt, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for the conversation and appreciate the opportunity. Thanks, Alethea. Thanks, Shana. And I look forward to discussing these important issues again.
Absolutely. Thanks again to our guest, Senator Arik Nesbitt. Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station, in collaboration with the Gongwer News Service. Mishmash is hosted and produced by me, Shayna Roth, and Gongwer's Zach Gorchow, and, of course, Alethea Kasbin. Additional production and editing by Ferns Laguerre Jr., mixing, mastering, and music by Sam Bobian. Our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, and Jenny Sherman. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. As always, if you listen to this podcast and you want to support it, and we really sincerely hope that you do, you can do so by leaving us a review or comment wherever you listen. You can also subscribe or follow us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure also that you tell your friends how much you've learned from Mishmash and how exciting and interesting our show is. Please send them a link. Remember, we're produced by a public radio station, which means we are listener supported. So if you really, really like this podcast, you can support WDET by going to WDET.org/give and become a member of WDET at WDET.org. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you next week.